You're listening to Let's Talk Business, the business podcast which connects entrepreneurs from all around the world. And today on the line with us, we have Dr. Connor Ward, also known as the Health Elevator. Connor, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for having me along. Hello to all the Ross FM listeners. I'm very happy to be with you today.
That's real. Thank you. And Connor, I believe you were actually, you're in Windsor, so you were actually at the royal wedding today. Well, certainly in the grounds of the royal wedding.
I am coming from Windsor today. Sunny Windsor. It was a lovely day for Prince Harry and Meghan as they got married. So I was there. Not quite in the wedding crowd, but not too far away from the action in Windsor today. And it was a lovely day for it.
And I'd say the energy there was pretty phenomenal today as well.
Oh, it was great. Yes, it was lovely to see everybody turning out, and it was a very happy atmosphere, and I think everything went well on the day, so that's all good.
Sure, that's great. Connor, I just have a few questions for you here relating to your career, and just starting from the beginning, can you talk to us a bit about life growing up in Enniskillen, and how were things for you in school, and how your dyslexia affected you growing up early on?
Oh, that's a great place to start because, you know, I mean, I'm biased, but nothing beats going home to County Fermanagh and the great lakes we had there. So, I mean, I had a great sort of childhood growing up and I started rowing from a very young age on Loch Earn and fishing and lots of water sports. So I had a great time living there. School was a bit of a challenge for me at the start. I was diagnosed dyslexic. I went to three different primary schools and eventually I was diagnosed dyslexic at the age of eight. I really struggled with reading and writing, but I was blessed to have a fantastic mum, as a lot of us Irish boys are. He was very dedicated and drove over 100 miles every week for 2 years in order to get a postgraduate certification in dyslexia education. And really, I am where I am today because my mum was putting in all that effort and basically taught me how to learn. Knew I had some intelligence. I wasn't as poorly regarded as some of the teachers were making out, and yes, so she had faith in me, and that developed my confidence, and then I went on to do fine academically and have a pretty good sporting career, and then went on to study chiropractic at university.
Well, that actually leads on to my next question there, Connor. At what point in your life did you realise that you wished to pursue a career in health, and did rowing influence your decision to work specifically with the spine?
I wish I could say it did. It was a very long story on how I became a chiropractor. But basically, when I was at school, I kind of came to a point, I was quite blessed, really. When I came to GCSEs at the age of 16, I was top of my year at art and top of my year in biology. And as a kid growing up, I was always interested in science and especially new age science, genetics, and cutting edge stuff like that. So I decided I was going to go down the science route rather than following the artistic route. But I came to the end of my A-levels and I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I took the decision to take a gap year, and I traveled around the world for 11 and a half months by myself. And along the way, I met a chiropractor, and he told me about how we could influence and fix particularly the spine and have an influence on the nervous system without the need for drugs or medication or any surgery. And I thought that sounded great to me. And I rang my mum and I said, "Mum, I wanna be a chiropractor." And she said, "Connor, that sounds better than what you said 2 weeks ago when you said you wanted to take up ballet dancing. So I'm gonna go with this. I'm gonna go with chiropractic, and we'll roll with that." And that's really the long and short of it. I signed up for chiropractic, and I ended up going to Bournemouth, the Anglo-European College of Chiropractic in Bournemouth, south of England.
Wow. So I didn't actually realise, Connor, it was a flip between ballet and being a chiropractor, but that's a pretty interesting story.
Close call. I think I would make a better chiropractor than I would a ballet dancer.
Well, you never know.
You see, Billy Elliot was very big at the time. I think he was having an influence on me.
Oh, stop. Can I ask you, how long did it take you to complete your studies in chiropractic medicine?
So it's a 5-year course.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's a lot of people maybe don't realize that maybe the difference between chiropractic and physiotherapy, but so we're trained as primary care physicians, which means that we are able to pick up serious conditions that may be causing, say, back pain, so something like cancer or an appendix or something like that. We need to be able to pick up all of that stuff. So we need to be trained in diagnosis. We also get taught 4 years of psychology, nutrition, pharmacology, so we can understand the drug interactions. We had to go around medical wards and hospitals. I watched amputations, autopsies. Wow. We worked with cadavers. And then we also are trained to take and interpret x-rays, although not every chiropractor will do it in practice. I do in my practice. And so all of that takes the 5 years. And my little brother, who's 10 years younger than me, is just going through chiropractic college right now. So he reminds me of how tough it is from time to time.
Gosh, I didn't actually realise that there was that much to it in terms of having to go around hospital wards and watch amputations and stuff. That's pretty interesting. You left the UK to travel to Peru for a year. And can you talk to us a bit about the differences in health between the people there and the people in the UK?
Sure. Well,
or their attitudes to health.
Sure. Well, I went on there because of it's the one country in the world where chiropractic has almost broken into, I would say, mainstream medicine and is highly utilized by the population. And so I wanted to see that firsthand. And the great thing is, no matter what you look like on the outside, everybody's skeleton looks the same on the inside. So,
which is hard to believe.
From a chiropractic point of view, it was very similar, you know, things that I was seeing day to day in practice, although the lifestyle was very different. The approach to medicine is also quite different. You know, South American and particularly Andean and Inca sort of foods and practices have become very vogue, you know, more and more people eating foods from that area of the world, and avocados and sweet potatoes and goji berries and everything coming out of that area is considered a superfood. But their approach to health is, the reason why chiropractic has really taken off is that they don't really like or maybe have accepted Western medicine as much as other areas, and they have a more traditional belief that that nature can cure the body. They also have a traditional form of a chiropractor called a huesero, which is basically a bone setter, so maybe a less scientific way of cracking the bones, shall we say. And because of that, chiropractic then came in and was more readily accepted by them, to the point where we're on TV every week. And if you Google the company, or if you go on YouTube and look at the company I worked for, it's Central Chiropractico Shubel. They have over 300 TV appearances talking about everything from how your bag's carried to the effects of the spine on migraines or disc injuries. And because of that reason, the general public have such a better knowledge about the role their spine plays and the role their nervous system plays on their overall health.
Connor, did working in South America have a profound effect on you?
It did, you know, it gave me we worked in the clinic, we worked on TV, and we also worked mission trips into the most poor and rural parts of the country. So areas where they didn't have any access to any other form of medicine. And that was the thing. So, sometimes, obviously, working in private practice, you can kind of get caught up in the fact that you're taking care of people and also managing the business side of things. But when you're doing a mission trip and you're seeing people who are in real need of any form of intervention to help improve their health, and they're just so thankful, you know, I had just such amazing, unique experiences taking care of all these children in orphanages and people who were brought to me in wheelbarrows with back pain, who couldn't hardly stand. But they're such a welcoming, happy, joyful people, in my experience, and really, you know, that really connected me with why I chose to do chiropractic, why it resonated with me whenever I was in Australia meeting that chiropractor for the first time. The reason I picked it over ballet was because of that, you know, taking care of people and seeing those big smiles whenever people start to feel better and function better.
That sounds like a very rewarding experience, Conor. Can you talk to us a bit about, during reading your bio there, you discussed the five pillars of modern health. Can you talk to us about those and maybe about what each one means?
Sure. So what I came to realize in my last 11 years in practice is that lifestyle medicine really is the thing that's now in vogue. So our approach to healthcare is kind of based on two fallacies. First of all, we base our health upon how we look and how we feel. So if somebody looks pretty good and doesn't have any symptoms, then we think we don't bother really to invest in our health the majority of the time. We certainly wouldn't go and see the doctor and say, you know, I don't have any symptoms and I exercise and eat pretty well. Can you help me? So really what we have is not a healthcare system, but a sick care management system, because we only go when we're ill. And unfortunately, if you look at the majority of chronic illnesses, be it diabetes, heart disease or cancer, the majority of them don't have any symptoms in the early stages. So I really realized this and realized that I had to make a change. And also, although I take care of people with back and neck problems predominantly, obviously our education involves all those things I talked about. So nutrition and psychology and all these other factors that influence someone's health. So I felt it was my responsibility to share that information in an easy to digest form, which is why I broke it down into the five pillars. So the first pillar is the obvious one I deal with day to day, which is your physical health. So being able to physically do what you need to do every day, be it sitting at a desk for 6 hours or, you know, rowing in the Olympics. So I see people from all walks of life, including elite athletes or people, like I say, who are more desk jockeys day to day. And there are unique physical challenges to the body for that. So making sure you're able to do that and that you're not open to an injury as part of that. The second pillar is your chemical health, which is what goes into, onto, or is absorbed by your body, and also your body's own internal chemistry. So your hormone balance, your brain chemicals, your gut function, all of those things. Again, it's probably the biggest of the categories really to discuss with people, because we want to try and find ways to make sure that we don't have high levels of toxins in our body, that our body are stressed to deal with, and also make sure that all of that system is balanced and remains in homeostasis. The next pillar is your mental health, so your emotional well-being, which comes down to basically how stressed you are and how happy you are and the ways and means you can improve that and again reset that balance. The fourth pillar is the one I discuss most often, which is the counterintuitive one. So whenever I ask people, and I'll ask you the question now, what made Arnold Schwarzenegger so strong?
Oh, training.
Training. Okay. So that's what most people say. Second most common one is steroids, but I don't get into that too much.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't think of that, actually.
the thing that most people say is training, lifting heavy weights, you know, doing that type of thing. But actually, physically lifting weights breaks down your body. So if you've ever gone to the gym and done an exercise you haven't done in a couple of months or years, yeah, even, how do you feel the next day? Do you feel...
You feel in pain.
Yeah, you're feeling pain, okay? So because what's happened is your body's been broken down. And the idea is that if you do it repetitively, then it gets stronger and stronger. So it was actually Arnold Schwarzenegger recovery. So if you've ever heard of someone going to the gym and doing leg day or doing arm day or doing back day,
yes,
that was made famous by Arnold Schwarzenegger. So what he realized is if he went into the gym and lifted everything in the room, his body would be in pain for a few days after that. So what he did, he went in and focused on one area. He focused on his arms one day. Then the next day he did his legs, so his arms were resting. The next day he did his back, his arms were still resting, recovery. And then the next day he went back to the arms. And because he went through that cycle, that's what made him unique and made him you know, the Mr. Universe for 8 years running or whatever it is. So you might not be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but your recovery is very, very important. Yes. So your recovery comes down to how often you're taking your holidays. And I think working with the corporate wellness sphere, a lot of people, because of, well, since the recession really, are fearful for the competition that exists maybe for their jobs and maybe aren't utilizing fully their holiday allowance. And also what we're seeing is chronic levels of insomnia, and that really is our day-to-day recovery. So recovery is that fourth and, for me, one of the most important pillars. And the last one, again, is one that's not obvious to many, but I see it every day, and that's your neurological health. So this is the one we don't really think about until we lose it. So if you have conditions like motor neuron disease or multiple sclerosis, your neurological health is a big part. That's what I deal with every day when I work with the spine. So making sure that your muscle tone is good, making sure your reflexes are working well, making sure your brain is working well, and that you're able to function cognitively. So we talk about strategies in order to improve that too.
Well, that's very interesting stuff there, Conor, and interesting to listen to as well. So the spine basically affects all aspects of health.
Yeah.
So if you've got really, a problem.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the thing is, so we are the best example I can talk about wellness is dentistry. Dentistry really managed it very, very well. So if you think of dentistry a few 100 years ago, dentists existed to pull out teeth whenever you had a toothache. And then they managed to convince almost the entire population that they should brush their teeth twice a day and come and see them once a year to make sure those teeth are staying healthy. Not only that, but to bring your children who have perfectly healthy teeth, you would think, in for a checkup regularly as well to make sure their teeth stay healthy. So it's the only thing that is adopted by almost everybody as a wellness point of view. Yeah. Now, if we consider that as an animal, we evolved for millions of years to be hunters and gatherers and then farmers. And then in a very, very short period of time, we went from doing very active things to doing very sedentary things, sitting at school from the age of 5 onwards, going into university, then maybe going into a job where you're sat all day long. There's a negative, or there is an effect on our spines. And for me, if people did yoga stretches or Pilates once a day, and then they came to see me for a checkup every so often, that means that we'd be preventing the 80% of people, 80% of people who have back and neck problems.
Wow.
In the UK and Ireland right now.
That's such a high percentage.
Yeah, 8 out of 10 people. So that was the latest studies are suffering currently with some form of back or neck pain.
And do you believe that's all down to a lack of proper stretching and movement?
It's a lack of, it's a side effect of the lifestyle. So again, if you're a caveman, never sat and stared at a TV screen for 8 hours a day, you know, you think about how we were designed to use our necks, again, hunting and gathering. It wasn't looking at mobile phones, scrolling and reversing that curvature in your neck so you're hunched over. Yeah. We see so many kids today. So there is a negative knock-on effect, and we call it tech neck in the chiropractic world.
Wow.
as a basic diagnosis. But negative effects of using technology, and you just think about again how that stretches out all those muscles in the back of the neck, causes headaches, causes tightness in the shoulders, and that's the most common thing I see day to day.
Okay. Conor, you're known as the health elevator, and you speak on the subject at different events around the world. Can you tell me, how did you become known as the health elevator? How did that happen?
Well, it was, you know, when you're a kid and you make up a nickname for yourself and you hope everybody calls you it, it's great whenever that actually happens as an adult. So, again, most people, when I say I'm a chiropractor, they instantly point to their back and neck and say, can you sort me out with something? You know, I've got some back problem or I've got a neck problem. So whenever I went into companies, whenever I said I was a chiropractor, there was often a preset idea that people had about what I did. And again, most people don't realize the training that's involved. And especially if someone, whenever I was rowing at elite level, I became much more interested in diet, much more interested in the mental side of performance. And so I wanted to come up with a name, a tag, a social tag that didn't involve chiropractic immediately. So I normally introduce myself as a health elevator, and I might be talking about diet, for example. If I introduce myself as a chiropractor, you'd be like, why is this chiropractor talking about diet? He's a back and neck pain guy, right?
So true.
So normally I introduce myself as the health elevator, and then some point along the line, I'll say my formal training was as a chiropractor. So that's the reason I became the health elevator. So it's really caught on, which has made me very happy.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it. And Conor, can you, just for our listeners, if anybody wants to get in contact with you or book an appointment with you, can you give out your information, please?
Sure. Well, I'm, as a chiropractor in clinic, I'm based in the southwest of London, in Kingston. And you can just get in contact with me. I work in a company called Halsa Care Group. Halsa is a Swedish word for health. And our Halsa Care Group in Surbiton is the clinic where I'm seeing people day to day, working with them there. If they want to get in contact with me and follow me on my social media, my Instagram is the Health Elevator. My Twitter account is Dr. Conor Ward, and my website is thehealthelevator.com. So any of those are able to, you can get in touch with me in there, and also on LinkedIn. So I'm Conor Ward, Doctor of Chiropractic on LinkedIn. So any of those mediums, if they are interested in coming in and having me speak to their people, or just looking at some of my five pillars of health information, then it's all available on there.
That's excellent. And thanks for giving out that information. Conor, we're just coming up to the end of our interview now, but what is your number one best piece of advice for good health?
It's to keep moving. It's the old, like my granny used to say, if you don't use it, you lose it. So it's making sure that if you are sitting stationary for an extended period of time, that, you know, every half hour, if you just get in and out of your chair 10 times, that will just help those discs in your lower back move. If you look up towards the ceiling and tilt your head back 10 times, it will just help that neck curvature reset itself, and that's the best bit of advice I can give to anybody.
Wow, that's excellent. Conor, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today here for Ross FM and for our podcast on Anchor FM as well. And hopefully we will chat to you again in the near future.
Thank you very much, Susan. I hope you have a lovely day.
You're listening to Let's Talk Business, and on the line now we have our resident chef Raymond McArdle, who's all the way from the north of Ireland. Ray, you're very, very welcome.
Good evening, Susan. How are you?
I'm very good. I should have actually said you're very welcome back, because you feature on the podcast weekly, but I hope you're enjoying all the sunshine we're having, Ray.
Well, the recipe inspired that today, so it's midsummer, and so I've decided to go for Wexford strawberry.
Ooh. Delish.
So the recipe's a strawberry fool, so it's kind of like a trifle.
Okay.
And it's served like a trifle.
I love trifle.
You get 1 kilo of Wexford strawberries, 150 grams of icing sugar, 1 pint of cream, and you semi-whip that cream, and you get a pint of yogurt. So it's quite healthy in a way.
Kind of.
So if you blend 1/3 of the strawberries with the icing sugar, you make a really nice strawberry puree in your pan blender or food processor, and then slice the rest of the strawberries and leave them in a bowl. Pour the puree over the sliced strawberries.
Okay.
And this is very simple. Just whip the cream and then fold the yogurt into the cream with a spatula in a bowl.
Okay.
Put some of the strawberries and the puree in the bottom of a glass, and then fold the rest of the strawberries and puree through the yogurt and whipped cream. Place the whole lot in the glass so you can see the layers. At the very bottom, there'll be sliced strawberries and puree, and then you've got this yogurt and cream mixed with strawberries in it. Put that in the glass and refrigerate for about 4 to 5 hours. And at the restaurant, we serve that at the moment, and we're serving it with strawberry candy floss on the top and strawberry crushed ice, which is called Granita.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
And we use Prosecco in the Granita. We puree strawberries with Prosecco and some ice and sugar and freeze it in tubs and then fork it with a fork to create crushed ice.
Oh.
So you have strawberry crushed ice with that.
Wow, that sounds absolutely incredible, Ray. And very, very easy.
Seasonal. Yeah, very easy, very seasonal. you could make that when you get home from work, any even if you're really tired.
And so what flavour yogurt do you use? Is it vanilla?
No, totally natural.
Oh, just natural yogurt?
Because, like natural Greek yogurt, the healthiest one you can get. Because you want the strawberries to be the star of the show, and Wexford strawberries are just the best in the world at the moment.
Oh, God, yeah, they're fab, absolutely fabulous. Well, that's a fantastic dessert to make at this time of the year, and especially with all the sunshine that we're having as well.
And really light and tasty and flavoursome.
Yeah, and kind of healthy.
I love it.
Mm, sounds fabulous. Mm. I think I might actually make that myself this week.
Give it a trip.
I'll give it a go. I can't really go wrong. Well, Ray, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here.
Thank you.
And we look forward to chatting to you next week.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks for calling me.
You're listening to Let's Talk Business, and now we are on to the foodie section of our show. And once again, we have our resident chef, Hugh McGivern. Hugh, you're very welcome back to Let's Talk Business. How are you?
I'm very well, Susan. How are you?
I'm great. I'm absolutely delighted with the sunny weather we're having, Hugh.
Lovely.
It's lovely. Nice. Hugh, I believe you've got something of an Irish dish for us tonight.
I have. I've got a Guinness salmon, actually, a Guinness cured salmon.
Ooh, sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely. And it's dead easy as well. Really easy.
Well, sure, look, that's what we like to hear.
Yeah.
So, would you like to give us the recipe for this delicious Irish dish?
Right. So, this is four people.
Okay.
It's a nice piece. So, if you go to your supermarket, you can get a piece of salmon. I think they cost about 15 quid, but you don't need as much as that because you're going to slice it really thin. So, you need roughly about a kilo, or in old money, £2.
Okay.
I like £2. And that's no skin removed as well. So, you just want the flesh. You want the juice of a couple of lemons, the juice and rind of a lime, some crushed coriander seeds, about a spoonful, like a good dessert spoonful, quite a lot of salt, about 100 grams of salt, 50 grams of sugar, if you go to the supermarket, you get little packets of dill, you want a whole one of them, all chopped up. Then you want a bottle of Guinness. I know it sounds like sacrilege wasting Guinness, but it's 330 millilitres of Guinness. Good Guinness.
Guinness is actually good for you.
It's full of iron. And then you've got the iron and the protein and the omega-3 and the omega-6. And, oh, it's just wonderful. You get citrus, you get the vitamins. Oh, I'm mad on my vitamins anyway. So, but this is very, very healthy Irish cooking in its 21st century twist. So have you placed the lemon and the lime juice plus all the zest? And dill, the coriander seeds, salt and sugar, and the Guinness into a big bowl and give it a really good mix. Put the salmon in a container. It could be a plastic container or a metal container. And pour it all over. Leave it in this for at least 2 days. I know it's a big ask, 2 days. And take it out. Pat it dry. Slice it nice and thinly. And serve it on top of... If you make little pancakes, but make them savoury instead of sweet, so you put a nice slice of that on top of the pancake, just a nice curl of the really thin salmon, and maybe a spoonful of creme fraiche or sour cream, and a few chives or some cress, and that's it. Enjoy it. It's quite posh, actually, if you sort of give it to your guests, like if you have a barbecue.
Wow.
Or something.
And that's it?
That's it. It's dead
easy.
Oh, my
God. That is so simple.
Yeah, but it takes 2 days. So it's a simple recipe, but it takes 2 days.
But there's a lot
days.
Of prep and preparation involved. Well, no, I mean, actually, a lengthy prep.
It's the 2 days, yeah. It's sort of drumming your fingers for 2 days. But if you're going to have a barbecue or something for friends, so before you, because everyone's always seems to be hanging around when you make a barbecue. So what you do is you can make this in advance. So whilst people are waiting about, you can bring these little secrets out.
Ooh.
And then, look at it. And don't drink the Guinness left over. Seriously, your kidneys will collapse.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And I think that's going to tie in very well with the barbecue weather we're having at the moment. And it's set to last until the middle of next week.
Yeah, we hope. Fingers
so
crossed.
People can get out there and make their Guinness salmon and surprise their guests at the barbecues. Well, Hugh, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to chatting to you again next week.
Look forward to it, Susan.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.